Blog Talk Radio.
Let's start the show.
I believe in you.
Yeah.
You know the door.
You're tuned in to NSF Radio.
In my deepest
with your host, Brother Alfred, and Carl's Brother Groovy.
Yeah. Once again, we are in the house. NSF is in the house, and everybody knows it. We are live, we are here, and we are direct in effect. Coming on with you right here from the east to the west to the north to the south. We just want to let you know that we are here. The Power Squad is in the house. All right, 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 right. We got our brother Tone. Are you in the house, my brother?
Live and direct.
Woo! Brother Koofy, are you in the house?
Yep, right here. What's up, y'all?
The Power Squad is in the house. Everybody, what's going on? What's going on? This is your brother, Brother Alfred. We are live right here in front of you. Guess what? We have moved. We just crossed the street, but we got a little bigger enough room right here. The studio's growing. And guess what? We are doing more. Everything's going. Also, don't forget to stay tuned next year. We will be launching NSF TV Network. So get your movies, entertainment, comedy, education right there for you. We're right here doing live shows for you, right there for you in your house, right there. If you got that Firefox, that Roku TV, the smart TV, download the app. As soon as it pops up on you, keep typing NSF and it will pop up. And as soon as it does, keep it going, keep it going. And as time progresses and everything grows, you know what's up? We're going to be doing more. All right? So also, don't forget to go down here to nsfatherhood.org. All right? Sign up. Get on the contact list. Make a donation. We are fully automatically set up for you. Hey, it's the time of giving. Am I right, everybody? Time of giving. So what's what? So get back and pay forward. All right? Right. Well, first of all, we're going to go into health. Now, you know, we all know what the COVID going on, when the coronavirus is going on, we need to maintain our health more than ever. We cannot sit here and just wait for a miracle drug that, believe it or not, is being tested. But you know what? It's sort of quick. And I do agree with some of the people who have been saying, where they're saying, okay, we've not come up with a cure for the common cold. We have not come up with a cure for cancer. We've been studying these for all these years, and we still have not come up with a proper cure. But now, under 6 months to almost a full year, we got this COVID situation, and suddenly out of nowhere, there is a cure or a vaccination set up already? Huh. Well, I don't know. I don't know. But so what I would say is, yes, look into it. Make sure you take your understanding, know what you are being a part of, what you're contributing to, and just keep it going as far as researching information. Constantly finding out what you need, maintain your immune system. Now, I'm a big fan of Dr. Sebi. Okay, Dr. Sebi was a doctor. He didn't need no medical license to me. But what he has done is cured diabetes, cancer, and he has gone in front of the CDC and the FDA, and he has gone in front of them, and they asked him to give them proof of his cures, of people that he has cured. And he has brought multitudes of people to the forum of our late great brother, Brother Nipsey Hussle, and Nick Cannon were persecuted, and there's some theories that they were assassinated over that situation. Okay? We got to be mindful of this, what is going on in our world today. We have to be mindful of what is being exposed to our children and our families. People are dying at exponentially rate. Now, I'm not trying to say I'm all big into it like that, but if you remember when Barack Obama was running and during that time, there was the follow-up, the Justice of Else situation. The minister even said to on people, to talk to people and say, listen, all right, they're trying to wipe us out, okay? And they're doing it, and they got this plan that's coming in. Now, this is before COVID came out. So it was supposed there was already a plan put into place. So we got to be on this. We got to be careful. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Something's going on. I mean, you know, listen, the rich gets richer, the poor gets poorer. But you know what? I say, guess what? We can split the script on this right now. All right? So we need you, our people, our fans, to listen up. We're going to give you some tips on how the immune system works. We're also going to give you tips on how to make sure you know what you can do to prevent your immune system getting weaker, especially people that have diabetes, that has a weak immune system, as well as those who's out there that has issues dealing with your constant health issues, you know. We've been getting into it for a little bit and just been getting into a little bit more. Now, we also have a special guest today. This man, trust me, every time I hear what he did and what he said, it puts an inspiration and inspires me to do my work even more. Okay? He's an inspiration towards the communities. Not just black community, white community, opening the minds of a broad-minded of a people. And it warms my heart to have somebody like this that's out there, that's speaking not just to our black sisters and our brown sisters and our Latino sisters or those of minority descent, but it's an inspiration that to have somebody that put this into perspective that people can feel appreciated, okay? This man came on TikTok, and it was around the election day, right after Joe Biden, well, I already know, won the election, okay? So with that being said, you know, he came on and he says, to all black women and those of those society, we appreciate you. Now, I'm just paraphrasing, but this man just inspired me so much, I can't do it justice, okay? So, you know, we're going to bring him on right now. All right, I'm all right, 405, my brother, what's going on? I hear you on here. All right, welcome to NSF Radio Show with the mom right here.
Thank you.
With the Powerhouse Squad. So what's going on? You up here with the Powerhouse Squad on the NSF. So just let me give me an introduction to who you are, what you do, what kind of person you are, and just give me the whole lay down, you.
Okay. So first of all, thank you, gentlemen, for having me on your show. I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm what I call an OAWG, an old-ass white guy. And the video you're talking about was my third TikTok. I didn't know much about TikTok. I knew that there was a message that I wanted to communicate. I'm a former police officer. I'm a honorably discharged veteran, and I live in a red state, Oklahoma. And I was like most of us on election night, pacing and walking back and forth, and hoping we weren't going to have a repeat of the 2016 election when Donald Trump won. And it was pretty scary for a bit there, but I started reading as much information as I could on the election. And one of the things that stuck out to me was at the time, I read an article on exit polling that said 96% of black women had voted for Biden. And they were the deciding factor in a lot of states that were traditionally red, like Georgia. They were the deciding factor in cities like Philadelphia and, cities that had a majority minority population. And I felt like that, they deserved our gratitude, especially mine. And from a person that they may not have recognized as an ally. And so I did a short 1 minute video. At the time, I think I had maybe 20 followers, and nobody was watching any of my videos. I'd get one or two views, and the video took off. And I think it was because there was a need for people of color, especially women of color, to know that they are appreciated. Historically, they have not been appreciated. They have, you know, black people and people of color have been pushed down, demonized, abused, and the response that I got from that video was overwhelming and unexpected. So that's how we got to this point.
Yeah, yeah. So I want a question for you. Okay. Now you said you started reading the articles, you're going into there, you're seeing that 96 or 97% that were black women were voting and out there presenting themselves for their candidate, which was Joe Biden.
Right.
So at that time, I mean, what was your mind before that? What was your concept of that, your thoughts before that? I mean, were you considering yourself a liberal-minded person before that, or were you just suddenly open after what you have seen?
I definitely consider myself on the progressive side, which is, you know, an anomaly for a person in my demographic. I'm, you know, mid-50-year-old white male with a police and military background. So, you know, that normally those descriptors don't normally coincide with a person being perceived as progressive or liberal or an ally. But my entire life I've been that. I voted for the progressive and the Democratic candidates since I could vote for the first time in 84.
Right.
I proudly voted for Barack Obama. One of the proudest moments of my life was when he won the first time and then the second time. And I still got all my Barack Obama paraphernalia.
I still have displayed
in my house, like you know, Catholics used to have of John F. Kennedy. It's a moment in my life where I thought we had a sea change in America where we were getting beyond race, but then we learned that.
I'm going to interject with that real quick. Let me just put it like this. All right. I voted for Barack Obama the first time, yes, because Barack Obama was we've seen as a hope of change. But then you realize, even when he with him in the White House, there was some restrictions, okay? Because you have to right. First of all, we all thought reparations were going to come. But then you have to realize Barack Obama was not just a black president. He was everybody's president. So when you got into that situation, I mean, the reparations never came. We kept waiting for a reparations bill. They, you know, we waited for something to be presented. Nothing happened, and because of that, when the second time came around, a lot of us in the black community or minority community, those in the poor situations, were disappointed. So they voted for him the second term, but more on a thinking aspect than it was actually, okay, this is our black president. No. And that's what a lot of people, especially when I was during that time, I was in the South. I was in the deep South. I'm talking about Gulfport on the coast, right where the Klan, Ku Klux Klan killed the mafia leaders right there on the beach in Biloxi. So you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm talking the DC land mafia kind of thing. So I'm just out of that situation scenario, you have to look at those kind of situations. Now, as a person, I mean, now I know you from what I'm hearing, you voted for him because you know you looking for that change on the first one. But what did you on the second time around? Did you look at more of a policy, or did you vote for him and because of an aspect of just trying to make sure that he's not a one-term president?
I think there's elements of both of that. That fact, you know, our other choice was Mitt Romney.
Enough.
We had Mitt Romney. you know, in hindsight, compared to Trump is not that bad, but you know, and then before that we had McCain and Sarah Palin, and there was no way in heck I was going to vote for McCain and Sarah Palin. So, you know, there I can certainly I agreed with some of, like every president, I agreed with some of Mr. Obama's policies. Some I thought he could have pushed more for, but you have to realize that Mitch McConnell and the Republican Senate, on the day he was elected, said we will never allow this man to accomplish anything, and they held true to that.
They fought
every step of the way.
Well, so, you know, the policies in the so-called situation is this. You know, you have to be able to look at every policy. See, listen, you can look at the face of a person. Okay, it's like a dating app almost. The way it's like, all right, you might say,
swipe right, swipe left.
Yeah, swipe left, swipe right. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he looks good. She looks good. No, you don't look good. Okay, swipe. You know what I'm saying? And it's like that situation. And there's a constant basis of that. You know, basically we're just trying to get into that whole situation. You know, but I did catch, you know, you said you was a police officer and a veteran as well. How long did you serve as a military officer?
I wasn't an officer. I was enlisted, but I served 6 years in the National Guard from 92 to 98.
Oh, okay, okay. Were you mostly stationed East Coast, West Coast? Where were you mostly stationed?
No, it was the state I live in, Oklahoma, the National Guard here, and it was during Clinton, the last term and a half of Clinton. It was relatively mm-hmm. peaceful. I never went anywhere besides some really horrible small towns in Texas and Arkansas. So I was by no means a combat veteran, but we didn't have any issues at the time. The only thing we had that I did a little bit of work on was the Oklahoma Murrow bombing. I did a little perimeter security for that, but you know, I was never in any danger and I never want to communicate that I was some kind of hero. I served, I did my time in the military, and I was honorably discharged, but I got out before all the craziness started in the Middle East and across the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand that because, you know, you're dealing with those kind of issues of constantly, you know, in traumatic situations. Some veterans, they come back and, you know, they got PTSD, stress, you know, that stress issue
Absolutely.
Is very high. On that, but see, that also comes with your position as a police officer as well. Now, you know, we talked about what it means to be a police officer, military, or in 2020. What do you advise to those who are still serving on that blue line? As a person who has served as a police officer, what can you say to those who's out there, so that's still out there pushing the word?
I would say to anyone that's serving as a police officer that it is incumbent upon you to uphold your oath. And there's many, many people who take that oath and they promise to serve honorably and defend the rights of people. And then they either violate it themselves or they stand by while other people do that and do nothing. So my advice to anybody serving in law enforcement would to be honor your oath, even if in honoring that oath, you have to take a stand against your brothers and sisters in blue, because by not doing that, by standing by and allowing people to commit criminal acts, in my opinion, in some cases, and at the very least, disrespectful or acts of power over people, and to stand
right,
by
right.
nothing, you are as guilty as the person that does it. You allow that sort of inscribed mentality to stay in effect, and it goes on to the next generation of cops and the next generation of cops, and someone has to stand up and break that. And I know firsthand that when you stand up against the police department, as a police officer, it doesn't matter if you're a police officer or a civilian, you face a wrath, but we have to get somehow beyond that.
All right. Okay, so basically, I just want to say, I don't know if the brothers got any question, Brother Kobe, Brother Tone, you guys got any question for the brother? Brother Kopi, Brother Tone.
Well, I mean, I don't really have a, I really don't have a question or anything. I mean, it's certain things that were said, that are, good to be talked about, and it's good to, to have different perspectives and things of that nature. I'm as people on the show probably know, or people that follow me, in different places, they already know. I'm a little different as far as stuff. Thank you for your service, first of all. I served as well in the Navy from 2000 to 2006, only a couple of places, and did some traveling and stuff. And so, even though I'm not as enamored by the American dream and stuff as much anymore, I still respect those who actually honestly and earnestly believe that what they're doing for their country is worth them laying their life down for it. So, that's always appreciated. My thing about it, I'm appreciative to hear, that, the things were said about our black women, because we know that black women, if we just be honest, as far as not just human beings, but as far as creatures, if we were to put them against animals and different things, are probably the most disrespected creatures on the planet, let alone human beings. Even as far as them working, working the most, having the best education, things like that, and still, being the least paid. And a lot of times, even, not just people of other quote unquote races or whatever, but even people of their own, race, their own brothers, their own sons, their own daughters, sometimes help out in that disrespect. Sometimes it's just even just being quiet about certain things that we shouldn't, or not being as supportive from within. So that's definitely appreciated. And also, as far as the stuff with, the presidency, I think, my whole thing once again goes to the same thing of, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm not really worried about who's in office or voting or whatever, but it's the coming together as a people. So that mindset, as far as at least making sure we're coming together as a people, at the end of the day, every president, whether it's Barack Obama, whether it's Bill Clinton, whether it's Ronald Reagan, whether it's Jimmy Carter, Lincoln, whether it's whomever you want to list, their number one goal is to preserve the union. And we know that presidents work for those who get them in office. So even like with me, with Obama, talking about what you guys were talking about, my issue, the thing with Obama, I came to an understanding very quickly. Even when he was running, if you remember, he was running and he was asked the question, how's it feel? You're going to be the first black president in the United States of America, which we know our history. Abraham Lincoln was actually Melungeon, which means he was a third white, a third black native, and a third black, a third black African. We know that Dwight D. Eisenhower's mother was black, so he wouldn't have been the first. We do that a lot when we kind of ignore history and to make people kind of up happy and get more propaganda and say, hey, let's go ahead and focus on this. And the reality is we weren't really dealing with something new. But he was asked, how does it feel to be the first black president? And he made a point to say, well, I'm not the black president, I'm not the white president, I'm the president. Everybody claps, but I understood what he was saying, because I understood his job is to preserve the union and make sure he takes care of his constituency. And what he was saying was, I'm not really worried about a black agenda. That's what he's really saying. I'm not worried about a white agenda. He was asked about Mexico. What are you going to do about the border? He said, well, I'll take care of that at the end of my term. He didn't take care of it at the end of the first term or the end of the second term. He kind of talked about it, but that was about it, because his job is to preserve the union. His job is to make sure that those people that got him in the office actually are going to get what they paid for. And the reality is, if you even look up the definition, because since people don't like to go off of ancient etymology and what words actually originally, even if we look at the word capitalism now, if you Google it real quick, the definition of capitalism is defined as economics and politics that are used to control basically, how money and everything works, how trade and everything, a trade and industry, that control is wielded by private industry, and that private industry controls the state. That's the actual definition of capitalism. So I'm not saying that capitalism is an evil thing, because we can wield it and use it for good. We can use it for each other. But to focus on a president as far as the president themselves is going to be the cause for change is a bad focus, because that's not there. Even if they might have some intentions to do that, I'm not saying that every president has never had any intentions to help the American people, but that's not overall what their job is. Their job is to be the face of the power and the structure that we have. So what we as a people need to start doing, whether we're talking about our black women, our black society, if we're talking about I forget what it was, OAWG or something like that, however the gentleman announced himself or whatever. Whoever we are, our goal should be to come together with like-minded stuff, with our own agenda, and when you have power, you can look somebody face-to-face rather than hoping they'll help you. You can actually look them eye-to-eye and say, these are our demands, this is what we want. You know, we want to be able to do this as far as controlling our own food. We want to do this as far as re-educating and getting rid of certain things that have been in the system. And so, you know, as far as those things, you know, I don't have any, you know, I don't have any gripe with anything that was said or any questions per se, but, you know, that's kind of what you're dealing with a lot of people as well, black or otherwise, as I'm starting to notice when I'm talking to a whole bunch of people all day, every day. And, you know what I do in the community, and I'm an activist and stuff like that. When I'm dealing with people, whether it's white or black, when we're feeding these people, when we're looking them in the eye, when we're saying, what can we do for you? Very few of them are saying, we need you to get the president to do blah, blah, blah. Very few of them are saying, we need you to get the council people to do blah, blah, blah. Very few of them are saying, we need the mayors and the governors. I'm not saying there's no need to keep them in check or look at them, but at the end of the day, I've kind of gotten past, you know, waiting for them to cause change. If anything, I use the military training, things that I've learned working for four-star generals, going around the world, policy in place and learning from them. I've learned more so how to make sure that I can use the tools that they taught me, the discipline they've taught me, the leadership skills they've taught me, to be able to make sure that we who really want change actually unite and start to come together. So, you know, police officers, they, even if we have good police officers, police officers who really want to make change, like the gentleman was saying, if you speak up, people come against you. And so they work for the system. It's not about their heart even all the time. It's not about if they hate you or don't like you. It's not about if they hate black people. You're dealing with a system where literally out of the United States of America, the Republic of the United States of America, slave patrol is actually what gave way to police officers wearing the same badge and everything else. You're dealing with a system that's been in place. You're dealing with a foundation that's cracked. And so the goal is either, are we going to be able to fix the correct foundation, or what are we going to do to be able to make sure that we start looking for new land, so to speak, a new society, a new system that actually allows us as a people, and even if we want to go outside of just the black people, as humanity, as those who are Americans or were known as Americans, eventually known as something else or whatever, what are we going to do to be in a system to where Republican and Democrat doesn't matter, because in long run it really doesn't. You know, we got one white guy who's rich with all this stuff out. Now we put another guy who's white and rich, who his running partner or his vice president now is somebody who literally told everybody in 2019 how racist he was. And now she's saying, we're going to cleanse the country. This is a guy who said, if you don't vote for him, then you're not black. This is a guy that said publicly, and I'm talking about 2020. People try to go back to 1970s. This is a guy publicly who said, hey, unlike black people, we know that the Latino community has a rich and diverse history. There's other things that we can bring up. So it's not about, okay, now Biden's in, everything changes, because we've been playing that game since technically, 1789, even though blacks couldn't vote then. And then according to the 15th Amendment, we were supposed to not be playing this game. It kind of worked for 10 years max, and it kind of went right back and actually worsened. So the goal for me is more so, when we have people with this mindset, are we willing to do as Brother Malcolm said a long time ago, you know, when it comes to revolution, and I'm not saying I want people to be physically ready to die, but I'm talking about your dedication. Brother Malcolm once said that, hey, you don't have a revolution without blood. You don't have a revolution that doesn't require some effort. You don't have a revolution that requires you to be willing to sacrifice some things. When they sent us to Korea, we died, right? This is what he said. When they sent us to Korea, you bled. When they sent you to Europe and fight in World War One and World War Two, you bled. When it was time to fight in the Civil War, you bled. But when it comes to little black babies dying and bombs and churches being bombed, you haven't got any blood. Now, once again, I'm not saying physically we should be able to bleed, but also having that military mindset and believing that it's worth dying or at least sacrificing and teaching and doing what you can for others in your community if we're in fact going to cause change. I think we have to start talking about a society. What are we willing to sacrifice? What are we willing to do? Are we willing to come together and grow food, take care of each other, simple things like that? Are we willing to make sure that housing is okay? Are we willing to make sure that no matter who is president, that nobody around us is not going to be able to enjoy freedom? There's a guy that I follow. He's actually a white gentleman on YouTube. He actually followed me back, which was like a highlight for me because I really am into what this dude talks about. But his name is Bo, B-E-A-U, Bo of the Fifth Column. And he once talked about the Pledge of Allegiance. And he said, when you look at the Pledge of Allegiance, a lot of people don't know there's been a whole bunch of different versions of the Pledge of Allegiance. But he said, basically, the one that we have now You know, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, liberty for justice for all. He said the most important thing of all that pledge is the beginning and the end. If we actually were all willing to say, I pledge allegiance to liberty and justice for all, how much better would we be? Right? Not the flag that it represents, not the country, not all the stuff. He said, no matter where you live in the world, no matter you, because that's not just an American principle. That's a principle that humanity should have. Can we all be dedicated to liberty and justice for all? I pledge allegiance to that. I pledge allegiance to liberty and justice for all. If we could have that and have that be our mentality, no matter what our background is, no matter what our skin color is, no matter if you want to call yourself American, African, Afrocentric, Black diaspora, whatever, at the end of the day, can you be committed to liberty and justice for all? And so for me, that's more the question, is while we're talking about all the policies and the before we put the people in the politics, before we talk about the people, are we dedicated to the real proclamation, which should be, you know, dedicated that really anybody is deserving of liberty and justice for all.
Woo! Oh, see, this is why Brother Kofi is the shadow band one. See, this is why the brother man, yo, when he just came out like a ninja in the night and just oh my God. Woo! Yeah, you know we gotta applaud that man. That's our brother there. Brother Tone, you're up, my brother.
Yes,
what's
sir.
Going on? Yo, let me tell you something. I got a hold of this man. This I'm going to say young man. You know what I'm saying? With the gray beard. You know, and I gotta tell you right now, he's definitely something, brother. So listen, man, I'm going to say this to y'all. We are getting into this right now. Hey, you know what that time is. We got to pay the bills. So you know what that is. You know who we are. It's time.
Once again, tune in to the Powerhouse Squad on NSF Radio Show. Every Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Listen live on NSF.
Oh, yeah, the Powerhouse Squad. Listen, everybody, let everybody know when you come to the show, we're giving it to you 1, 2, 3, knockout with all the knowledge. All right, just like my brother Tone said, you know, the minds inside that pyramid, that peak, that all-seeing eye, you know what I'm saying? That wisdom is always on the top of the mountain. So guess what? Get ready to climb because it's worth the climb when the Powerhouse Squad is in the house. So guess what? Yo, we all, you know, we always want to give everybody out here to let everybody know, you know, we get into the next part. And, you know, I just wanted to give my chance to everybody to say, hey, we appreciate you coming on. Hey, my man, I appreciate you coming on today. You know, thanks for coming on to NSF Radio and listening to the Power Squad Squad. We appreciate you. And we want to say thank you for coming on. And, stay tuned. Hey, go ahead, my man.
I appreciate the opportunity, gentlemen. I learned something. And I think the best way we can be allies is to shut up and listen.
Word. You know, keep ears open.
That's great.
Yeah.
I want to just touch on that. Just,
go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen.
First and foremost, thank you. I want to say thank you to the guest that is on the call with us today. And thank you again for all of the information that you provided, you know, the historical information to back up your points. But in short, I'm going to be very short. Dear America, love us past being entertained by us. Love us past being entertained by us. And what I simply mean by that is through music, through film, through sports, we are embraced.
Right,
above and beyond that, it's a disgrace in the manner that some people choose to engage daily with people from different ethnicities, different backgrounds. So again, like I said, in short, just love us beyond being entertained by us. And that's my
goal, gentlemen.
Yeah. All right.
Can I add something to that real quick? Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
And I just wanted to say too on that, you know, we were talking about that on the podcast the other day, and I've kind of been mentioning that in some of the live sessions that we do, because a lot of people, I don't think that we even understand even in that, you know, that you have to be careful even in that. And I think it's something that's gotten us as, you know, once again, get into this red-blue thing, you know, get the whole gang mentality or the black agenda, where we don't really focus on the agenda, but we focus on certain people that represent black people. And so we get upset or frustrated or happy just because somebody black is in front of us, right? They represent us. And I was telling people, if you think about it, why are we so upset about a Waka Flocka or Steve Harvey or Kanye West or Lil Wayne or whoever it is going to step up and be like, we're with Trump, or, you know, the Democrats are bad, woo-woo-woo, whatever. It's something that's designed to cause more frustration and division on both sides of the party aisle, or within your own communities, or within those that are progressive, whatever we want to call ourselves. Those things are designed to get us to be against each other. The reason why, if you think about it, is that really what happens is this, and this has happened from the times of Sammy Davis Jr., this has happened from the times of Step and Fetch It, this has happened from the times of, you know, black people in blackface, white people in blackface. We forget that there were black brothers that were in blackface first, and they couldn't even, you know, get a good gig outside of acting as stupid as possible unless they were on the Chitlin Circuit, if those remember and know what the Chitlin Circuit is about. We forget that all through the history of politics, you always bring black entertainers up and you say, listen, black people, these are the people that are your entertainers. And what they're really saying is, these are your leaders. Now, what you really got to get out of that, though, is that what they're saying is, hey, these black people who entertain us are who we say are your leaders. We don't actually care about them. We don't actually listen to them. They make us laugh. They do movies for us. They tell us this is what black people in the community are like, right? They shuck and jive, and we appreciate their shucking and jiving, and we say this is what they're supposed to be. See, these are the good ones. These are the ones that make us laugh, that entertain us, that put on that black face for us and make us feel comfortable about Eurocentric values and things, and therefore this is why we'll bring them in front of you. And so we'll bring them in front of you because this is our entertainment. See, what our entertainment is your leadership. And if I were to make it, I try to make it plain on the podcast when I was talking, I was telling people, think about this. Now, a lot of people don't like to hear it this way, especially black people, because we've been trained to think that these people are our leaders. But think about it like this. That's like a king in Europe having a court jester and needing to go ahead and have everybody in the community around them listen to what they're going to say. So instead of sending somebody who is a representative of them, instead of sending somebody to give a decree, instead of sending the army out to be able to say, this is what we're going to use to keep everybody in control and listen to us, they send out the court jester and say that this is my entertainment. Hey, court jester, go and get the people to see you. And when they see you, they're going to recognize that you as the entertainment are the people that are supposed to be our leadership. But this is what we have done to us all the time. It makes no sense. Even the people who were poor and would have been uneducated, wouldn't have known how to read, write, et cetera, they would have been like, why are you presenting us with the jester, with the entertainment? That's not our That's not leadership. That's not good representation. They would have revolted. They would have been upset. But we see the entertainment, the jester, come out. And we say, oh, good, okay, the jester's speaking on behalf of the king. And so we say, okay, cool, well, whatever the king says must be good because he sent us the entertainment. That's how they see a lot of these people. Lil Wayne is not somebody that's respected as somebody who's intelligent, but you're going to see him on whatever show that is Undisputed with Skip Bayless and all that stuff. You're going to see him there. You're going to see him with Trump. You're going to see him in certain places to where they're there. He's there to tell you that all lives matter. Well, then you'll watch him in his shows, and he'll go ahead in the shows and say Black Lives Matter. He don't even know what he's talking. He's smacked out of his mind. He's high. He's not even he's supposed to be. And yet we will accept that, or we'll even get frustrated and be like, Lil Wayne, why are you representing us? Understand, Lil Wayne doesn't represent you. He never did.
Right.
He's
right,
a jester.
Right.
He's a court jester. Look, I'm sorry if this is Jonah to make fun of him or whatever, but I'm going to just keep it 100. Even look at his face. Look at the way he carries himself. Look at how he presents himself. He is somebody who has been designed specifically to be somebody that represents entertainment to somebody else, and yet we get upset and frustrated, and we lose our mind. Don't lose your mind. Once again, that's not your representation. Just like the president, it's really not your representation. There's no president that's ever knocked on my door and been like, hey, can I help you out with some food? I don't care what the color of his skin was, right? I still had to make sure my family was fed. I still had to make sure I got into owning land. I still had to make sure I'm going out taking care of my community. I still need to make sure no matter what color you are, if I see you out here hungry, if we're doing a coat drive, I'm not going to let you freeze. I'm not worried about if the mayor of D.C. or if I'm in Baltimore, the mayor of Baltimore, or if I'm in Georgia, the mayor of Georgia or whomever, even if I know some of them, I'm not worried about them making sure that these people get what they need. That's not on them. That's not their job. Once again, their job is to maintain or to preserve the union. That's their job. That's what they got hired to do. I'm not concerned about them doing that for us, you know?
Yeah, but let me go into that when we talk about the sense of humor.
But more so, I'm just speaking on the common grounds of camaraderie where, you know, people come together at sporting events and celebrate these athletes and they're wearing their jerseys and, you know, it goes beyond that. Mm-hmm. Like when something as simplistic as a man is traded to another organization, didn't have anything to do with it, so per se. But then we want to burn the jersey and tarnish the name and say how we are so vengeful towards that individual, you know, because the organization, the franchise, traded their property and the human cattle to another team, you know, for that specific purpose. And I speak to it to something that happened, like with LeBron James, for example, when the Cleveland Cavaliers, well, he left through a free agency. And, you know, almost the whole world turned on a person for saying, hey, let me better my situation. You know what I mean? And that was just insane to see the reaction behind humans that have no vested interest in this young man other than to watch him on television or to attend a sporting event and watch him participate. But that's at a time where it's team first, in most instances, and then the player. And so I'm just likening that to us in society to say, hey, if we're big enough to gravitate to an organization and we can have the decency to hug each other, embrace each other, say cheers in the parking lot with each other doing tailgating, why can't that just be the norm in life?
I see what you're saying there, and on that point, but I would like to also – I want to go back to what Brother Cooper was talking about when he was saying – he was talking about shuck and jive when we were talking about the Lucene humor part. And I think what we are missing here – we got to remember, Bob Hope and the comedian Duck – they used to call him Duck Schultz. They were Jewish comedians back in the early 30s, 40s, and 50s when Bob Hope and them used to come out. Now, you know, we went into that part and we go into it and we understood that, you know, that they said, you know, if a people can laugh at themselves, then able to make the whole world smile. So they would come up with these insensitive jokes, even on their own culture. And I remember hearing about this when I was younger and I listened to Bob Hope was talking about it. And if you remember Groucho Marx and Harpo and all those guys, Harpo was Jewish. Harpo was actually a Jewish comedian, but he would do Jewish jokes about his own religion and try to laugh at it. So the black comedians started coming in and they started doing the same thing. And they said, okay, I can laugh at myself. So they do the insensitive joke where they put blackface on, they come out there, they shuck in the job and trying to kiss up to the master, but see, they were doing it for a different reason. The Jewish people were able to do it because they were trying to present some kind of sense of humor, and they started building these formats, and they started doing it, and the Jewish coalition came in, and they started working with these, you know, and they started working along and trying to get these comedians, these Jewish comedians started coming in, and they started, you know, they doing jokes, well, you know, it's funny about being a Jew. You know, and this is, you know, and they start doing the, you know, impersonation, more sugar, you know, they do all these kind of things. And then, you know, and then they degrading themselves in the community, but their community was better than our community because they were keeping together. We still trying to recover during those in the early 30s and 40s. We weren't even we were barely speaking a fraction of what they were able to do back then. So we come into that society and we go into that society and we move forward in it. And now we get comedians that make fun of us, like Jerry Seinfeld. You heard about how he made fun of Jewish people, and he's Jewish. And then, you know, in blacks, being blacks today, they try to do the same thing. You know, what's his name? Brother Robert, who did the show Parenthood. You know, he was one that tried to turn it around and do the same thing to Jewish, but we weren't ready for it. You know what I'm saying? As far as being a comedian or somebody to still have pride in himself and his community and still present something that is good. So, you know, those kind of issues came in. You know, this is getting deep on us right now. Hold on. It's 45 past the hour right now. And this is your host, Brother Howard, up with the Powerhouse Squad. We are in the radio, keeping it real right there for you. Want to hit the commercial right now? Keep it on. You know what happens. Every Monday and Wednesday, the man of the hour is always on.
What's going on? You're listening to Midnight Oil with King Cam on NSF Radio, where you get music, motivation, and more.
All right, all right. We want to appreciate you coming on. Listen, we're getting ready to do part two of this whole thing. We're talking about health. Okay, the biggest thing in our community right now is we're trying to keep ourselves healthy, especially with the corona going on, COVID-19, whatever you want to call it. The sneeze and tickle, the death killer, the one that they're saying that's, believe it or not, is worse than heart disease or cancer right now in the United States. It's the number one killer. This is what they're prospecting and going on. The first trials are coming out, people coming along here, you know, and they're saying, okay, this vaccinations came out and we got this thing here. You take two shots, two appointments, one, two, and then you should be immune, or you should have some protection against COVID-19. I say, from my perspective, you still need to do more. If you take it or don't take it, you need to do more. So you need to be educated on how your immune system works, how your body builds up these things, these so-called immune systems. And it's antibodies in your body system. So what we're going to go with is we're bringing on Dr. Sabi. God rest his soul. You know, he has presented us these things that we are not aware of. So people, please tune in. Get with it. If you have any questions, please call 516-418-5805. Call in today. We are getting on with Dr. Sabi.
Welcome. Welcome to the new perspective of healing. No, I said. But in reality, it is as old as creation. Yeah. The subject is healing. You see, it has to be as old as creation, because the components that is going to address healing or bring about healing has to be one that is considered native geologically. Native plants are natural plants. Natural plants are electrical. Why? The base of natural plant, the very foundation, is what the Chinese call the CHO arrangement. Carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So in life, to life expression, for life to express itself or to exist, there has to be what? carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. The Chinese call it the Cho. I agree. What does Cho have to do with healing? It is the structure that would allow a substance to readily assimilate biologically. Without carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, that substance is non-electrical. It is non-organic. So, as we take a look at life, we want to clear the air. We want to dismiss that myth. We want to dispel the myth that this and that is incurable, and that this and that disease came through the process of what? Germ, virus, or bacteria. Well, you see, this is the philosophy of medicine. As you can see, I am of a genetic predisposition that is African. I am an African, and I think that it is the greatest thing that ever happened to me to be born an African. Or, like, if I was a Chinaman, I would have loved to be a Chinaman, or a Caucasian, or an Arab, or an Eskimo. So, we are talking this way to show that whatever you are, that is what you were supposed to be. And as we are that expression that life made, like life expression carved out this image, you called Sebi. I had no control of that. So as we travel on the journey of healing, we want to ask one question that hasn't been asked in my lifetime that I know about, and probably it has been asked, and I am totally unaware of it. It doesn't mean that it wasn't asked. Why do we get sick? The body was not designed to be sick. Bird doesn't get sick. Elephant doesn't get sick. He needs no vet. The lion doesn't need a vet. Neither is a giraffe or any of the natural animals. Why do we get sick? There has been a violation that is costing us our life today. And it would have been okay if I live happy until I die because of the violation, but that isn't what's happening. Because of the violation, I become stressed. I become extremely stressed until I die. Why do we get sick? What is the violation? The violation comes with creation, the understanding of it. The violation is when we have forgot or dismissed the Ecclesiastes when it is said, the herbs are for the healing of the nations. But we don't care about that. God, you make your statement that the herbs are good. We are conditioned for a chemical God. So God, whatever you have to say is in trouble today, because I, Pastor Gale, I'm referring to my brother. I'm a preacher. For 30 years, God, and my brother Sabi, known as Dr. Sabi, came and showed me in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, Ezekiel, and Revelation, that the herbs are for the healing of the nation. But what my brother Sabi didn't know, that the food that I have been trained to eat have turned me against the very God that I claim to worship. I am compelled to violate that greatest image, that greatest structure, God and the organic world. So now, I don't want to take you into a crazy maze of a bunch of words that I am deploying to you. I want to make sense because you make sense. We all make sense. Why are we sick? And where is the violation? Oh, I want to say this before we get into the subject, that the reason for the violation, and the violation didn't come to me until I was about 50 years of age. But I was born here in Honduras, in Ilanga, a little village with 7 houses. And that little boy is going to grow up in that village until the age of 8. And you mean to tell me that from that position, which the house in which I was born was ground, it was the dirt. We didn't have any ceramic or wood. Mama didn't have that. Mama had the dirt floor. It was always clean. So from that level of being born in Ilanga, Honduras, to have made this leap into the understanding of things, that I would arrive at deploying these words to you about health. The boy never been to school. The boy didn't read any books. I was least of the candidate that could think about occupying a position that could be credible. Well, guess what? Nature designs and decides that. The violation, you're going to see it. You see, I said we're going to travel on this journey. It's a beautiful journey. It's a beautiful path. It's peaceful because it brings understanding. Look carefully about the way the African live in the jungles. Look at the way the Inca live in the desert of Nazca. Look at the way the Maya lived in Central America. And then we go to the Toltecs and the Olmecs in Mexico. Then we go to the Cheyenne and the Sioux, those American Indians. Carefully, we're going to begin with that. The African, the Inca from South America, the Maya Central America, the Toltecs and the Olmecs from Mexico, and the American brothers and sisters, natives. You know what we are called by certain on certain levels of understanding. We are called the organic family. The organic family? All families are organic. Not so. I was in Nazca, Peru, which I travel once in a while. I love Peru. I've been going to Peru since 1955. And I enjoy going to Peru like I enjoy going to Mexico. It was in Peru that I became aware of the organic family through a Peruvian Inca descendant. He said, "Black man, are you aware or do you have any idea what you represent?" I said, "No, Paul." He said, "Well, we have something in common. We are a member of the organic family." What do you mean by that? You see, the organic family is exactly what we say it is. Organic. No waste. We do not produce waste. Everything about us is recyclable. And this is why we didn't have any toilets. Oh God, what is this? This man is showing me something that I have never before heard. We didn't have any toilets. I said, "No, we don't have any toilets. We didn't need that." Remember, what we ate was products that are considered native. No starch, no uric acid, no blood. No blood, no starch. Uric acid, blood. Carbonic acid, starch. You see, when we ate electric food. That's all we had in our environment. The organic family only had electric food as part of their diet. So they ate very little and infrequent. It wasn't necessary to eat three times a day with plates full of tanya, dashin, cassava, and blood. Not to mention the rice, which is starch, glycerinic acid. No, we didn't have that. The organic family only ate electric food. So when he passed his feces, he could pass his feces in his hands and put it back in the soil. But the family, he said, that live outside of that cosmic arrangement, you don't want to be around when you use the bathroom. It's something that is horrible. Imagine what goes on inside if what you smell is so unpleasant. What goes on inside? So the organic family, being that it was electric food, their diet, there was no waste. This was recyclable. Didn't need a toilet. Do you understand, black man, what I'm saying to you? You remember Paul? I said, "Of course." And I love it. The organic family was never diseased. Why? It was impossible. It was impossible because we live within the arrangement, the procession of life. I'm not an anchor. and there are certain things that are indigenous to the Inca. I am not a Sioux or a Cheyenne. I am not a Toltec. I'm not a Maya. But I am an African. And there is a connection with the family. So,
yeah. Let me tell you something. Every time I listen to Dr. C, we was only able to give you a sample today because, you know, we're right now, we're a bunch of busy brothers. The Powerhouse Squad is always on the move. We're keeping everything going. We want to appreciate everything. But we're going to dig into it. All right. We're going to start it out, Brother Tone. Are you there, brother? Let's get in it. Let's get into it. What are you thinking about what Brother Dr. Savy was saying? Give me your perspective of what you think about. First of all, what do you know about Dr. Savy?
I know him through popular culture, as he's been spoken of, and through media in recent years. That was my first introduction to the man himself as far as what legacy he created and left behind for himself through imagery and through his teachings. But as far as his philosophies,
yeah. Hold on. I think we just lost him. But Kubi, step in, brother. Come on. What you think about what I hear? Dr. Savy's in the house. Give me the 411 on. Come on.
Well, I mean, so of course, Dr. Savy is somebody who is important for us. Dr. Savy is actually the first person that I heard teach me about how to eat, like as far as why I'm eating, what I'm eating, what good is it for. But specifically what he's talking about, and, you know, one of the great ancestors that we have, and we give much love and respect. But he's talking specifically about what he's talking about is something that's important. Now, in his life journey, what a lot of people don't recognize, what he's talking about in that story, if you're not familiar with his earlier years, is that he was somebody who, you know, was very sick, actually. He was somebody who had a lot of extra weight. I think he had gotten close to 300 pounds. If you know who Dr. Savy is, if you've seen him speak, you would be surprised because he's nothing close to that towards the end of his life and for most of his life that we know about him. But he was somebody who had health issues. He was somebody who was overweight. He was dealing with blood sugar issues. He was diabetic. He actually was having issues with his reproductive system, so he wasn't basically able to have sex or very infrequently was, which if you know how many children he ends his life with, you know that's something that's interesting, you know, that happens as well. So he actually is going through life and he doesn't really know what to do. He runs into this person he's talking about now, and this person that he's talking about actually takes him on a journey and basically says, you know, I can tell that you're sick. And he tells him all of the symptoms. He tells him that you probably are impotent. He says you probably are overweight. He says you probably can't really move that well. And he lists all these things. At this time, you know, he wouldn't have been known as Dr. Savy. But he's just kind of looking at him like, how do you know all these things? And he's like, I can tell because you're not eating correctly. And he's the one that, you know, reintroduces him, actually, the scripture, which says, you know, that eating is important really it says the leaves, but some versions say the herbs are for the healings of the nations. And so the gentleman tells Dr. Savy straight up, you know, like, what you need to do is you need to not eat. What you need to do is fast. You've been eating incorrectly. Your body doesn't know what to do. And he was like, I promise you, if you just don't eat, you will lose the weight. You will be able to have sex again. You will not have the diabetic issues you have. Your blood sugar will go down, all these things. And so Dr. Savy, over time, decides to take his advice and actually fast. And as he fasts, everything that the gentleman tells him is going to happen to him. He becomes healthy again. He's able to have sex again. He's able to, become a better person. He's able to think clearly for the first time. He's able to do a lot of different things. And so when he goes through this process, he then starts his journey on food and starts listening to this person, starts realizing about the electric diet, he starts learning about organic food, he starts learning about what did black people actually eat before they were taken from certain places, you know, because black people in Africa, when we were, you know, the African part of us, they have African part of the diaspora, they still don't technically eat like we eat, but they definitely didn't eat anywhere close to what we eat now. Even people that were slaves, now this is more of a little Dr. Laia Africa I'm sneaking in, but even when we were slaves, or some of our ancestors were slaves, you had to understand that even when they were in the fields, they knew certain things to eat because they weren't going to have a chance to really eat regularly and eat correctly. So they would eat certain things in the field. They ate things like poke salad. They actually knew what real watermelon was. They knew what real eggplant was. They knew how to do certain things differently. And so he learns these things. He learns about the electric diet as far as your body is electrical. Therefore, your food is eating that you're eating is electrical and certain things that happen. He is somebody who is very much so focused on mucus as well. He learns pretty much that if somebody's sick, usually they're going to be dealing with a bunch of mucus or they're going to be dealing with a lack of oxygen. So he begins to go towards foods that are electric, that help with oxygen, that help with getting rid of mucus, and he begins to become so good at it that he starts to heal people. Now, the reason he got the name Dr. Sebi, that was actually something that was gifted to him by some of our black sisters on the island that he was on at the time, and he was healing people so well that they began to call him Dr. Sebi. That's where the doctor part came. So he never once, he called himself Dr. Sebi out of respect for the black woman who had seen him healing and gave him that name. That's actually how he got the name that we now know him as today. And he keeps going down this journey, which led him to be able to just simply make sure he focused on those things. Now, obviously, there's certain things that focus on certain parts of the body, that focus on flushing mucus out of certain parts of the system, that oxygenate parts, certain parts. We know that you are what you eat and that your food looks like what is there to heal, you know, certain things like if you're eating, you know, you're male and you're trying to help your pancreas, you know, eat sweet potato. If you're female and you're trying to help with your breast or even with breast milk, you know, you can eat anything that's citrus. Even citrus, if you cut it open, it looks like the inside of the mammary glands, as well as it actually, if you look at the outside of a lemon or of a lime or certain things like that, you know, it looks like the actual nipple. It looks like the areola and stuff like that. So he begins to do these things and it leads him down the path you were talking about earlier before you played the video, where he's able to even heal cancer. He's able to heal AIDS. He's able to heal sickle cell. He was able to heal people of different places. People like Michael Jackson came to him before Michael Jackson got back into getting the doctors and being, you know, kind of being addicted to certain drugs and stuff. And he helped Michael Jackson. He healed Left Eye. He healed a lot of different people, and so. And he actually was brought before the Supreme Court in New York because they didn't like the fact that he had that name that was given to him by black women that he never stopped using, which was Dr. Sebi. And they were like, he's this guy trying to say he can heal things. And, you know, in European medicine, you're taught to tell people you can't heal anything. Nothing can be healed. So they got together, and even people that were, you know, supposed to be his friends, other black people who were healers, they didn't like the fact he was getting all this press and stuff. They didn't believe that his stuff to work, so they took him to the New York Supreme Court, and he actually went in and proved to them without any representation, just by himself. He proved to them and talked to them and told them and showed them how he could heal anything that anybody has, because everything that anybody has can be healed simply by making sure that you understand, once again, you know, the leaves or the herbs are for the healing of the nation, and that anything that has been created for us to be able to make sure that we maintain. And sometimes eating just less food can be something that heals people. So, you know, he is somebody who, for me personally, I know, you know, years back now, is the first person that actually explained eating to me in such a manner in which I actually, you know, I got it. Like, oh, okay. Like, this is why I eat. This is why my cells do what they do. This is why you get cancer. This is why you get dis-ease, you know, because any sickness is basically dis-ease. You're uneasy. If I can figure out why I'm at dis-ease, I can actually figure out how to ease my body, versus Eurocentric medicine is actually designed different. It comes from a different culture because it comes from people that attack. And therefore, they, you know, the culture says that if you have something that attacks you, you attack what attacks you, versus actually trying to figure out how to put your body at ease. So he's the first person that really got me into thinking that, leading me into other people that were speaking of healing and even making it to now where my wife is, you know, she's a herbalist as well, but we have, you know, stuff that we do to heal people and utilize the same things that, you know, really started with him going down that route. So, you know, sad to hear about him. What was it, 5-6 years ago, something like that, where he passed away. Some people talk about he was murdered or whatever, but, you know, where he's no longer with us. But the teachings that he's given and the things that he studied, as he even said, you know, he made a point to say, this might sound like it's new to some, but this actually is as old as, you know, as creation. This is stuff that is here from the beginning of the earth and will continue to be here way after us. But as many of us have forgotten, as have done, we've forgotten what it is to put our hands in the soil, to be able to look outside and see certain things that are growing all around us, from dandelion to burdock root to whatever, to lettuce that grows around us.
Right.
And we've decided that these things are we've decided that the natural or the natural things are actually not as good as the chemical things. But going back to what you were talking about, and then I'll get out the way. Originally and initially, with all the stuff people were talking about with COVID and everything, that's why I don't even worry about the vaccination stuff as much as some people do. Because if you know how to oxygenate your body, if your body has enough oxygen, if your pH level is high enough, if you have enough stuff going on electrically correct within your body, not only can you heal yourself, but anything that you contract basically passes through you and is actually, you know, is becomes excrement and is taken out as waste. So
that's what I've been saying.
So you can catch COVID, but COVID, you know, like, for example, if you catch anything, they say take vitamin C. Vitamin C is really doing nothing more than making sure that you get a whole bunch of oxygen. And once you get that oxygen in you, you actually, if you take too much vitamin C, you don't get sick. What happens is you get diarrhea. Now, people say, I got diarrhea, I'm sick, because they're used to chemical talk. But diarrhea is actually your body saying, I'm flushing everything. So, like, that's why people say, take as much vitamin C as you can. Eat this stuff that has vitamin C, whatever. Why? Because it puts your body in a position to where no matter what you're going, it will actually flush it. If you're somebody who has cancer, if you understand that cancer is your cells only get 40% of the oxygen that they need, and sometimes the plastic and stuff that you're eating out of or drinking out of is actually helping your cells to have a growth because they have estrogen mimickers in the plastic. So if you can eliminate some plastic, and if you can make sure you have more oxygen and make sure that you just live a life that's out in the sun and that you laugh a little bit more, you actually begin to see cancer go away before you have to take chemo, which is not designed to kill cancer. It's actually designed to kill you, but they hope that it kills you enough to where the cancer gets too weak to be able to exist in your system. Once again, a system set up to attack you rather than work with you. So I learned that a lot from Dr. Sabin. That's really what his mindset is. That's his background. And that's what he was focusing on with what he was just talking about.
Yeah, see, because what I learned about Dr. Sabin watching his videos and everything. Then I also saw the documentary with Nick Canning, with Nipsey Hussle, and I watched that, and my mind just started blowing out of the way. Then I started getting into it, and then I find out Dr. Sabin was, as a young man, he went to see Elijah Muhammad. And Elijah Muhammad and Dr. Sabin, he's, you know, the brother he was growing with, introduced him on how to eat to live on that level. And it was just, it was crazy that, you know, that was going on. And I'm sitting there like, hold on. So fasting, so Dr. Sabin met Elijah Muhammad, sat down with Elijah Muhammad, gave him some information on proper farming and aquaculture, and told them different ways you can do and to, you know, to turn the soil and so on and so forth. Now, you all know Elijah Muhammad was born, Elijah Poole was a farm boy in Black Hole, Georgia, which was a very high populated farming community. And they would grow corn, vegetables, collard greens, cotton. They get everything fresh, and that mentality as an agriculturist is somebody that is, you know, that knows how to know when the best time to pick and to get the best nutrients out of the vegetables or the fruits that they plant. So, you know, that timing, that understanding when to get the best out of something is very vital, so that you, when you do have if you're eating kale or your spinach or rutabaga or certain vegetables that to help cure the ailments, because Food is nothing, is not for you just to eat. It's a healing tool. You know what I'm saying? Food is made to heal. If your body is craving something, or say, okay, I'm craving chicken, well, guess why you're craving chicken? Why are you craving chicken? Because you know what? Your body is programmed to think I can get the nutrients from the chicken. But believe it or not, where does the chicken get the nutrients from? From the earth. So cut the middleman out. Go and have the same nutrients and that where the chicken gets from, and you don't need to do that. Now, our dear brother, the other brother that, you know, who passed away just recently, I believe in 2001, I can't remember the brother's name. He was a very controversial brother. He would say, okay, you will cook you eat a chicken fetus, and you have the chicken fetus.
You're talking about Dr. Laiye Africa, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that bro. And I remember watching him one time, he's speaking it, and he said, well, look at this. The cow eats the grass, and you get the nutrients from the cow who eats the grass. Why are you eating the cow? Why don't you eat what the cow's eating and bringing the nutrients straight to your house? And I said, hold on, man, I ain't never thought about that. Okay. I know about fasting. I know about eating. I know the scripture talks about it, Bible and Quran and Torah, talks about fasting and cleansing the body and so on and so forth. But I never thought in the term or the understanding that, you know, we should be going to the source. Our bodies, believe it or not, is vegetarian based by nature. But I'm not going to say I'm a vegetarian. I mean, I tried it. Okay, I did try it. And I tried my best with it. And I did it for about 2 years. But then after 2 years, that beefsteak came by and the beef ribs and... I threw the towel in there and they said, no, hand me some ribs and some barbecue sauce. I could not stop. But I still try to eat healthy, and I still eat as much healthy as I can, especially with me being diabetic. And, you know, and I try to, you know, now try to keep that going. And I encourage everybody. Be on that difficulty task, because, you know, they say after trial and fire come ease. And, you know, sometimes you're going to have to go through a tough patch before you could actually see success of what's going on. All right, everybody, all right. It's getting down 7 minutes to the hour, 7 minutes to the time. All right, when we're going to sign up, everybody, we know what we do. It's getting down to the wire. Everybody's in the house. Powerhouse Squad is here. And guess what? Powerhouse Squad, sound up. All right. We got Brother Kofi. Are you in the house?
Always.
All right. Brother Tone, are you in the house?
I'm in here, hanging in here.
Now, you know, Brother Tony, I call the second worker the hardest man. I have to say third, because, you know, I put my hand up right now. You know, Brother Alfred, we ain't going to get into that right now. But anyway, we all want to say, everybody, it's time for you all to know. Get on down with the Powerhouse Squad. If you're out there, give a shout and a holler. Give us a call. Don't forget to download the episode. Keep it right here for you. Take it on the go. Don't forget. Oh, got a big announcement for you. Brother Cooper's going to be having his own TV show. He's going to be revamping Soul from 1970 to 70 show, and it's going to be called Kofi Speaks Soul. Now, this brother's going to have some powerful guests, and I'm going to make sure. You know what I'm saying? He's going to be having the best of conversations the meat bone. So tune in. I'll tell you again. NSF TV Network, please download that app on your smart TV. If you don't have a smart TV, get one. And if you don't have the money, get what? Borrow from somebody. Get a stimulus check. I don't care, but get one. Get on. Download the NSS TV network because we are going to be live and hot and in effect for you. Also, don't forget, get to your hair. The Power Hot Squad coats, Brian, coats, hats, everything. We're going to have it all for you for the holiday season. Yes, we do know about the delay that we've been hearing, about the slow time, the best time to buy. But put your order in still. Come on, let's get with it. Get down to it. And listen, you know what's going on. It's the Power Hot Squad and NSF Radio. Okay, so everybody, where I want to say thank you for coming on today. It's that time once again. We're here. We're going to keep it real 100 for you right here for the Hour of Power. Right here at the show, the number one. We know who we are right there for you.
Tune in to the Power Hot Squad on NSF Radio Show. Every Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All right. I want to say thank you once again for everybody coming on. All right, yo, don't forget, next week we are going to have a hot one for you. We're going to continue on with Dr. Sabi a little bit, bring another clip on for you so you can just love what's going on. Try to keep that education. And also, don't forget to tune in. The 26th of this year, we're going to have a Kwanzaa special. All right. So celebrate that first day of Kwanzaa. So come on, get in tuned in, be part of the show. We're definitely going to have something hot for you right there for you, and you're definitely going to enjoy it when you want it out there. Also want to let you know, everybody, check your Kwanzaa stockings, because everybody on the Powerhouse Squad's got a little gift coming in the mail. And if you don't know, now you do. All right, this is your brother Alfred. Brother Tone and Brother Koopy, the Powerhouse Squad is left the building.